Welcome to the midday for a Tuesday. I'm Norman Gilliland, broadcasting live today from the Mickelson Auditorium at the UW-Stevens Point. And we're going to have a performance by a young pianist who was actually on this show about 2.5 years ago. And he's going to be, I'm venturing to say, even better now than he was then. And he was fantastic back in 2012. And, of course, we'll have the quiz question at 12:30 as usual. That's already in. And lots of music and some conversation, too. And now let's meet him. Welcome, please, Michael Doerr. Is that okay to shake hands with a pianist right before he's going to play what can be a really demanding program?
Maybe.
I tried not to put the power grip on you there.
I was more afraid I'd crush your hand.
Well, that's probably a greater danger, let's face it. Yours have been working a lot harder than mine. And what have you been up to since the last, it's about 2.5 years since you were on the midday.
Yeah, it kind of feels like forever, though. Let's see. Mostly I've been studying here at Stevens Point.
That was your plan then, I remember. The next move, UW-Stevens Point?
Yeah, it was the big next step from high school, then to college. I'm a junior now, so got 2 years left in my degree program on a 5-year track.
That's a lot of piano playing, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Now, do you have a trajectory beyond where you are now? I mean, you know, as a wonderful, let's say, student pianist at this point, What's at the end of the rainbow there?
Well, I'm pretty much planning, once I graduate, to go into master's school in piano performance. My professor and I are still talking about what schools to apply to, since I've got about 1.5 years before I start auditioning. There's still some time and wiggle room to decide what to apply to.
Well, you're going to be starting with some Beethoven, and not just any Beethoven. It's sonata that you say is actually paired with the Moonlight Sonata, even though if you kind of look at the numbering system, there's a couple in between. But so what's the connection?
Well, the numbering system is not really that accurate, but Beethoven composed this sonata, Opus 27, number 1 in E-flat major, as a part of a set, and it was paired with the Moonlight Sonata, which was the second half of the set. It was a very innovative work at the time. He was combining fantasia forms with the sonata genre. And the way he did it was very, very unique. And for listeners and concert goers back then, hearing it for the first time would have been quite a unique experience.
E-flat, you know, we think of the Emperor Concerto, the Eroica Symphony, that heroic keys that E-flat seemed to be for Beethoven. Do you think that applies to this sonata?
I would say so, particularly in the fourth movement. Has kind of a more, its texture's simple. It's got it has a very nice melody and the like, but it has a drive and it has a heroic aspect to it, particularly at the coda.
And is he doing anything special with, you know, repeats? I've heard that the third movement sort of comes back in the fourth, which is a little unorthodox.
Yeah, it's quite unorthodox, at least for the time. What Beethoven did is he took the third movement, the theme of the third movement, and then at the very end of the fourth movement, he brings it back, except in the fourth movement's key. And then, after hearing that one last time, he then finishes off with a coda. It's a very interesting choice.
Does he do any tricks with key shifting?
Yes, particularly in the first movement. It's in a simple, more or less ABA form. So he gives you this really slow, beautiful theme at the beginning. Then in the middle, out of nowhere, he jumps to the key of C major. And it's this kind of this more sparkly, bright, fast-moving section, and then it comes back after that's finished to the first theme.
And these movements are pretty tightly linked, are they?
Yes. This is another thing that's very unique about the sonata. Beethoven says that all the movements are supposed to be played a tacca, which basically means that you're supposed to play it from the first movement all the way through the fourth movement with no breaks. And he to my knowledge, there's not a single, Beethoven's sonata after that where he used that technique. So it's very unique in that aspect.
And no rest for the pianist.
No rest.
Well, you get to see it and hear it, as we do have Wisconsin Public Television with us today, too, and you'll be able to see this performance probably early in the next year, but you can see it online probably by mid-December at WPT.org. But here it is, live from UW-Stevens Point, Michael Doerr with Beethoven's Piano Sonata in E-flat, Opus 27, Number 1. Thank you. the door. With Beethoven's Piano Sonata in E-flat, Opus 14, number one. Heroic indeed, certainly the way you played it. Great stuff. Would you say that of those 32 Beethoven piano sonatas, is there kind of an approach, a systematic approach that you would take as a student, as a performer of those?
Let me think about that. Pretty much for when you're learning a piece, any piece actually, in piano, there's pretty much a, not a method, but a way of doing it. You start it slow, you learn the notes, you then speed it up, you then figure out all the little technical intricacies, and then you start refining like the little nuances and everything from that. I mean, it's pretty much the same actually for anything. For Beethoven, you just have to really know his style well to pull it off.
And in terms, though, of starting with one sonata versus another in your artistic development, is there one that's like the Mount Everest of Beethoven piano sonatas? And if so, where would this, would be, like Mount Mitchell or Mount Rainier, or where would that fit in?
Probably the Hammerklavier. that's a long ways off, I would say, probably. It would definitely be Mount Everest. Himalayas, definitely.
And so is there, let's say, a sentimental favorite Beethoven piano sonata for you at the ripe old age of, what, 19?
when it comes to pieces, there's not, like, one favorite one. I like pieces based on, like, how they express different moods, and I enjoy them for that reason. So for this, maybe that's not the way to explain it, but, like, this sonata, there's... Like, the way it opens is this really calm way. It's just a really calm affect. And then it finishes off with that heroic fourth movement. And just that arc is unique to that sonata, and I appreciate it on that level. But, you know, like the Moonlight Sonata, that expresses different things, and I like it just the same amount, but in a different way.
Got it. Sonatas a lot like people, you know, you like them just as much, but in a different way. And now back to Michael Doerr, and I mentioned contrasting composer, and in this case, Scarlatti, who of course was no slouch as a keyboard player. He was very intimidating, in fact, for those who kind of squared off against him in competitions. But what about the style? You're going to be playing two of these brief Scarlatti sonatas.
Yes, that's correct. With Scarlatti, he was actually, for the listeners who don't know, he was a Baroque composer who was a contemporary of Bach. But unlike Bach, his style is quite a bit different. It still has that Baroque sound to it, but it's simpler. It's not polyphonic. It doesn't have multiple voices like Bach does. So it's very, very singable. It's also very, some of his sonatas can be very demanding technically. They're very virtuosic and fingery, more so than Bach even. So he was a great harpsichordist. He also composed a lot of these sonatas. He wrote over 500 of them. So he wrote a lot. They're pretty short. They're not sonatas in the way that we think of sonatas. They are, first of all, I mean, as I said, they're short, but they also have a different form. They have two halves that sometimes will be very similar and sometimes very dissimilar from each other. He actually composed, scholars think, probably all of his sonatas for his patron, Maria Barbara, who was the princess of Spain and then became the queen of Portugal. And she was actually a really talented harpsichordist herself. So... As for these sonatas, I'm going to be playing a paired set. There was a scholar, Ralph Kirkpatrick, who, after studying all of Scarlatti's sonatas and his historical background and the like, he thinks that a lot of Scarlatti's sonatas are paired according to keys. So it's kind of like having a two-movement sonata in a way. So the first sonata I'm going to be playing is a very slow, melodic song. It's kind of, has like elements of Spanish singing in it. It's very singable line. It's almost like an aria. The second piece is, it's a fast, more technical, traditional Scarlatti sonata. It begins with kind of this fanfare of kind of like a hunting call or something, and then it just spins out from there.
Two sonatas by Scarlatti, the pianist, Michael Doerr. I think they liked it. Two sonatas by Domenico Scarlatti. Michael Dorr, our pianist, and Scarlatti spent a lot of time in Spain, and Albéniz spent even more there. He was actually a Spanish composer, and his nationality colored just about everything he wrote, didn't it?
Yeah, that's correct. The piece I'm going to play today is actually it's from his Iberia collection, which is what he called basically Impressions of Spain. So this is, you're going to hear a lot of Spanish dances. There's the fandango is in this piece in form, you know. But he was part of Isaac Albéniz was part of the Spanish nationalist movement in music in about. He lived in about late 19th century, and this set, this piece and its associated pieces were composed shortly before his death.
And the name of this particular one?
Evocation. Thank you.
Evocacion, the name of the piece, by Isaac Albanus. And if ever a piano piece could have fragrance, I think that one did. It was almost like being in a garden, wasn't it? Now, some more contrast. And we go to the year 1943, and we find out what Sergei Prokofiev was up to.
Yes, this is the third movement of Prokofiev's seventh sonata. It's the Precipitato. He composed it during World War II, and it's considered one of his war sonatas. I think it was 6 through 8 are his war sonatas. And you can hear like influence of that. There's this drive that just pushes all the way to the end like a battlefield and just climaxes at the end. And there's just like elements of gunfire and stuff like that. So it's really one of my favorites.
So we're going from something with 7 flats, I think it was, to something that has gunfire.
Yes, yes. It's really cool.
Prokofiev. Michael Doerr. That was the third movement. I want to say from the symphony number 7 by Prokofiev, may as well, but it's theoretically at least a piano sonata. And you delivered in all of the, not just the percussion, but of course the what should we say, the artillery that you promised, Michael. And quite a contrast with the Scarlatti. Would it be safe to say that that's a piece you and everything you have played today has been without music? But I think that's one you would just about have to have in your head, wouldn't you, in order to play it?
Absolutely. There's no way you can play that reading from music. There's too many leaps.
You'd be bound to lose something, probably the music, for one thing. Well, it has been a great pleasure having you on the midday again, and don't stay away so long. It's been 2.5 years. We'll see if we can shorten the loop a little bit next time.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you. Nice to be on.